Fair Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, or online at KFAI.org. Well, so am I.
Yeah, me too.
Shouldn't everybody?
And thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my research PR person, is feeling a little under the weather today. We are here to remind you that we are podcasted and are on archives for 2 weeks. But if you want to hear our podcasts or want to hear this show after, just tell your big brother speaker to play the latest episode of Disability in Progress. Tonight, we speak with Joel Snyder. Joel's a PhD and author of The Visual Made Verbal, a comprehensive training manual and guide to the history and applications of audio description. Joel, how are you? All right. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Wasn't sure if you could hear me.
I can hear you.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. So I want to start out by having you give us a little bit of history about you before you got into audio description and leading up to that. Just like a brief history.
Oh, sure. Sure. My background is principally in professional theater and media. Ever since I was little, I wanted to be on the stage. part of that is just using my voice, obviously. When I was an undergraduate in college, I had the opportunity to read books for a blind college student. University of Maryland, yeah. And that led to doing some recording talking books for the Library of Congress here in the Washington, D.C. area. And that led to my learning about the Washington Ear, which is a radio reading service. Sam, you probably know all about those radio reading services.
Yes.
And it allows, of course, people who are blind or otherwise where print is inaccessible, they can hear the newspaper being read to them or magazines and such. And I auditioned and was thrilled to be accepted as a reader. My assignment, my principal assignment, was the Washington Post on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So, and I remember even back then in the 70s, when we got to a picture, a photograph or a illustration, a graphic, gee, what do we do there? You can't read that, and we would just describe it, obviously. But there was no such thing as audio description, a formal kind of way of describing images. We just sort of did it off the cuff. And I was there at the Washington Ear, and around 1980, the founder of the Ear, Dr. Margaret Fanstiel, a blind woman, was on a committee at Arena Stage, the main regional theater here in the D.C. area. She was on an accessibility committee, and that was rarely done in those days, especially. But there was one meeting where the theater introduced assisted listening Wow, this is a new thing. Of course, it's ubiquitous now, but assisted listening makes the sounds more accessible to people with hearing loss. And Margaret figured, well, if it's just a microphone on the stage, why couldn't you have a second channel and have a microphone off the stage where a person could describe what's going on, using the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue. And Arena Stage said, well, we've never heard of that. And Margaret said, well, I've never heard of it either. It didn't exist. But she came back to the Arena was willing to give it a shot. She came back to the studio. She grabbed me. I was had a background in theater, an English teacher and such, and a couple of others. And we hammered this out. What would we do? What would we call it? Audio description. And in 1981, in the summer, the world's first ongoing audio description service was born, describing a production of Major Barbara at Arena Stage. So 81. It began in performing arts, Sam.
Oh, my goodness. 81. Wow. And so then if for all those who kind of now have the idea of audio description, so talk up a little bit about how the audio description is different from closed captioning.
Oh, sure. Well, of course, they're kind of mirror images in a sense. Closed captioning, and of course, the general public knows about closed captions because they see them on television well, maybe they're in a bar or they're at the gym. And those closed captions allow sounds to be rendered in a form that's accessible to people who are deaf. So closed captions are not just the words that you hear, but sounds. And they're rendered into text that a deaf person can see. A blind person, of course, or someone with low vision, the captions are not going to help so much. They might to a certain extent, but description is really a separate audio track that's added into a program. Once again, using traditional audio description, using the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue. So it's an audio thing, whereas closed captions are visual.
Can you talk a little bit about what, you know, now that there's audio descriptions in movies and theater and shows, and what are some of the challenges that come with describing live theater as opposed to film or TV?
Oh, my. Yeah. This is a great question because, you know, I've been doing this since the beginning, so about 45 years now. And I've been active in all of those areas, including museums. Again, it began in performing arts. And the challenge there is to know the play as thoroughly as possible, take notes, even develop a script. In the early days, you know, maybe we saw the show two, three times, took notes, and then based on those notes, we would insert verbiage in those pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue or critical sound elements and do it sort of off the cuff. Nowadays, it probably most audio description in theater is still done that way. I've been researching and hoping that we can find a way to make audio description available at every single performance in a theatrical run. Part of the way we did it back in the beginning, it was all volunteers. And so really you saw the production two or three times, and then you did the description only at one or two performances.
Right. That's often still how it happens.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So my thought is, what if you hired a describer like a cast member in a way, but they would go to some rehearsals. They would see the production developing. They would talk to the director, the scenic designer, the actors, and develop a script for the audio description. So no more of this totally off the cuff kind of thing. But it would be then available opening night. And at every single performance, the describer could go home. Unlike a cast member, the describer could go home if there's nobody there to listen to him or her. So that's something that we're experimenting more and more with. Another answer to that problem is recorded audio description. But I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, that timing for live could get really tricky. If anything,
yeah,
gets
for live
off.
Events, anything can happen on stage.
Right.
And the technical side of it is much trickier to work out. It's timed to light cues or sound cues, and that can have there can be difficulties there.
Yes.
Plus, the recordings are generally not available until 2 or 3 weeks into the run of a show. A lot of shows are closed by then. and of course, a blind person could never go to an opening night. So that's the theater scene, if you will. And it was only, oh golly, about 3 or 4 years after we started doing description for theater in Washington that Barry Cronin, who used to work at WGBH in Boston, he heard about us and he thought, wow, this would be great for television, for VHS tapes, even that sort of thing. And he knew how to sync the audio description sound with the sound of the television program,
oh, cool.
Which is something we didn't know about really. But he knew that there was a secondary audio program channel, a separate audio channel that was there for Spanish translation, but wasn't being used much. And he thought, well, we could use that for audio description. And so we did a pilot for them. In fact, I wrote and voiced 3 of the very first television programs ever with audio description. They were broadcast in this pilot, and it worked. People got the hang of it. It made sense, and WGBH ran with it. They started developing their own program for broadcast television. They started doing description for VHS videotapes. Mm. Remember those, Sam?
Yes. And, I don't like to admit that, but I do.
Yeah. Then later DVDs and such. So they were really the first major producer of description for television. And then for the occasional film, we're lucky that now just about every film produced in the United States.
Just about, but I
yeah,
can
just
still
about has
find
an audio
some.
Description track. Largely due to awareness of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, what good is a movie theater to somebody who's deaf if there are no captions on the screen? What good is a movie theater to somebody who's blind if there's no audio description? So the movie theaters realized that, and moreover, the movie producers realized that. And now, as I say, just about every film coming out has an audio description track with it. And in fact, getting closer up to the present, even the streaming services have embraced audio description so that it's available worldwide. And in fact, they produce audio description oftentimes in 12 or 15 languages. So that's a great thing. We've come a long way over 4.5 decades.
Yes. I have seen several kids' movies that I've recently seen that has it. Sadly, though, I can still find some stuff on TV or Netflix even that's not audio described.
Oh, yeah.
And it really, I'm like, this, it kind of saddens me because this should just be something that's built into the system.
No question.
It shouldn't be a problem with that. And I don't.
No, I'm with you 100%. the problem is, we were talking about commercial development of films and such. The filmmakers and the broadcasters, basically they choose what will end up with description. And if it's a new film, sure. But a lot of those producers have thousands of films in their archives and their libraries. Is it worth it to them to develop description for things that, for things like that, that are in the public domain,
though,
where there isn't much demand for it? And that's why a lot of those programs won't have description. So, and you've bumped into that, Sam. We're working on that too, trying to raise money to get. One idea is to get all of the films on the Library of Congress registry of films, get all of them available with description and captions, because these are supposed to be, you know, the finest films ever produced. And we're working on raising some money to try and make that happen.
We need to take a short station break, and we'll be right back.
Programming at KFAI is supported in part by the Dakota, presenting the Devon Almond Project, Sunday, August 23rd.
Devon Almond celebrates 20 years since the release of his first album with this very special to-date retrospective of his career.
He'll pull songs from each of his musical projects, including Honey Tribe, the Almond Betts Band, Blues Summit, Royal Southern Brotherhood, as well as songs from the Almond Brothers catalog.
Opening the show, our special guest, GA20. More information about the Devon Almond Project live at the Dakota is available at dakotacooks.com.
And you're tuned to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and listening to Disability and Progress. I'm Sam. We're speaking with Joel Snyder, who is the author of the book, The Visual Made Verbal. And we're talking about audio description. And Joel, what inspired you to write this?
Well, you know, having worked with it from the very beginning and developing throughout the time in the first couple of decades, doing training of describers, developing fundamentals of audio description, concepts that I think any good audio describer has to master. For instance, observation. When you're looking at a movie, when you're at a play, a museum exhibit, noticing everything that's there, everything. Really look. Most sighted people, you know, they see, but they don't observe. Well, a describer can't do that. And a describer must really notice what's there. And then the second element is to edit from what you see. Select the most salient visual images. There's no way you can describe everything. And you don't want to either. You need to really find the essence of what that visual image is. Select those items, and those are the things you'll want to describe. The third fundamental is language. This is all about words, spoken word, but it's about language. It's about folks who have a rich vocabulary, folks who can write in ways that are lively and innovative and really can conjure images in the mind's eye for people who are listening. That's where we spend the most time, is developing the words, really. And then finally, the fourth fundamental that I teach is vocal skills, because it, you know, 99% of audio description is heard. It's done aloud.
Yes.
And so the vocal end of things. Now, you know, back in the theater days, that was almost always the same person, the person who's observing, the person that's developing the description and then delivering the description. Nowadays with media, it's separated. There are describers who write description, and then there are voice talents who voice the description. And there are special techniques, vocal skills for doing that, certainly. So after a while, I thought to myself, I'm going to start writing this down. And that led to the book, really. The book is actually kind of a popularized or cleaned up, if you will, version of my PhD dissertation, which was for the Universitat Autonoma de Barcelona, where I worked with them for and other graduate programs throughout Europe, because they started developing courses in audio description. They had been doing courses in what's overall called audiovisual translation. And that just simply means subtitles and dubbing. And they heard about audio description. They brought me out there to train the leaders of those programs. And now people get master's degrees and PhDs in audio description. So I thought to myself, wow, I helped get that program started in Barcelona. So I enrolled and over 5 years developed my dissertation. And that became the book, The Visual Made Verbal, which I'm proud to say is available in Braille, in two audio books, and in print in seven languages now, because I've been all around the world training describers, golly, in over 60 countries, and developed partnerships with places like the Hong Kong Society for the Blind. So my book is in Mandarin Chinese, et cetera. So and Spanish, I did with the World Blind Union. All of their work is in English, French, and Spanish. So it's grown a great deal.
Who did you all write the book for? Is it just for trainers, or?
That's good. Really, it's I'm not sure that the general public that has an interest in how things are translated from one format to another, they'll pick up on it. Students of audiovisual translation certainly pick up on it, but I really bought it. People buy it, and I wrote it for. Folks that are interested in doing description as volunteers in live theater, as professionals for media, as people developing audio described tours in museums. And another part of this too is that it's really, I think an important book for folks who are blind, folks who have low vision. Listen, this all started with Margaret Vansteel, who was blind. And so it's not just for blind people, it's really by blind people. And the book goes into that. Blind people make some of the best quality control consultants on audio description scripts for media. They even develop scripts as well. They're the best audio editors, and they are some of the best voice talents for audio description. So primarily the blind community and people interested in description, I think, are the main targets for the book.
What is the biggest misconception, would you say, people have about audio description?
You know, that people, audio description is woefully underknown. You know, if you say audio description to the person on the street, they'll go, what's that? What do you mean? You know, and if you start talking about it, they think, oh, I know what you're talking. Yeah, those are the words on the screen.
Yes.
The captions.
Right.
You know, there are twice as many deaf people or people with hearing loss than there are people who are blind or have low vision. So the deaf community is, and they, closed captioning has been available for, golly, 50 years, long time.
Yes.
Now 60 years even. So people know about that, and they if you're talking about an assistive technology for folks with disabilities, a communication technique, they think about deaf people. They think about captions. So clearing that up, as you mentioned earlier, is that's probably the biggest misconception or misunderstanding.
You know, I know what you say is true, because especially a handful of years ago when I would go to the movie theater more, they were constantly handing me the wrong device.
Oh,
to constantly.
Yes.
And I'd have to say, no, this isn't it.
No, and in fact, that's funny. I know people who are blind who have stacks of free passes to go to the movie theater because they got given the wrong headset. And so the manager says, I'm so sorry. Here's a pass to come back to the movie theater, where it will most likely happen again. Part of the problem is because movie theater personnel is a lot of turnover.
Not trained right, yeah.
So you have to constantly train people on which headset is what, or it may be one headset, but it has to be set for either boosting sound for people with hearing loss or audio description. And if it's not set correctly, you're going to get, you know, you'll hear things a little more clearly, but you won't get the description.
Right.
And that's just so annoying. Nowadays, you know, something that's percolating around the United States to some extent, probably more so in Europe, is using your own smartphone to hear description.
Mm.
You can actually download an app, and the app can actually listen to what the soundtrack is in a movie.
Oh.
You download to the app the audio description track for that movie. So then when you go into the movie theater, or this works at home, the movie starts, you press a button, and that app automatically syncs the audio description track to the audio track of the movie. Anywhere in the movie, it can pick up wherever in the movie.
I see. It's so really kind of amazing. You wouldn't have to press at a certain time. If you pressed it,
no, just start it at the beginning. But if you, you can start it in the middle of the film too, and it'll pick up, which is just great. It's just not very available these days. That's a shame.
You know, I have noticed. I have, you know, when I get the right device at the movie theater, I've had pretty good luck with it working. But I have noticed a lot of times at in plays, if I go to the theater live with a play, the audio description equipment sometimes is less than desirable. Can you talk a little bit about how that works, who's in charge of that, and why sometimes in some parts of the theater it works and others it doesn't?
Yeah, that's tricky. It's a whole different transmission system than is done for television or film, of course. In a movie theater, I'm sorry, in a quote-unquote legitimate theater with live plays, typically the transmission is from a booth. If they're lucky, there's a booth, but it may be somebody in the back of the house who has a headset microphone attached to a very small portable FM transmitter, FM radio. And you go into the theater as someone who wants to hear the description. You are issued an FM receiver tuned to the particular frequency that the describer is using. And, you know, there are problems there because sometimes you're just too far away. If that portable transmitter only has a reach of maybe 100 feet, 200 feet, something like that, that can be a problem. Sometimes there's interference with other FM signals, which could be used in the theater by the stage manager, perhaps to communicate to the lighting people or whatever. So that's a problem. But FM is not the only way. It's attractive because they're portable, and a theater can share them with another theater and such. But another way to do it is via an infrared system. People may be familiar with, go to a live theater setting or even in a movie, and many of those spaces are equipped with an infrared transmission system. Up at the top of the proscenium is usually a box that looks like a speaker and a little lights on it. And what that does is the sound from the stage, microphones on the stage, that sound is transmitted to those boxes, those infrared boxes. It's transformed into an infrared light beam. And that goes to a special infrared receiver. It's got a little glass ball on it, and it transfers the sound, the light beam rather, to sound. And it's used primarily, the reason they're all over the place is because it's used to boost sound, just like the FM signal. It could be used to boost sound. But most theaters have this built in, and it's an infrared signal. The problem there, so it can be used for audio description as well. The problem is that it's a line of sight system. And if, in other words, if you happen to raise your hand between that little glass bulb on the receiver, you know, if you get in the way of that light beam, that infrared light beam, you get static. You get, you know, nothing comes through.
Yeah.
And so it's called line of sight. FM doesn't have that problem because it's radio. It goes through walls. But if the signal's not strong enough, then you can have problems with the FM.
Oh, wow.
So, people have different feelings about, infrared is better or FM is better, that sort of thing. I've used FM systems mostly throughout my career working with description. And those FM systems are portable. They can be used, for instance, for audio description in a museum, perhaps. or there could be other kinds of ways to transmit the sound for an audio-described tour.
Could you tell us, like, the most common mistakes new describers make?
Well, what do you mean? The comments? We don't make any mistakes. Oh, you're talking about other describers.
Right,
okay.
Right. Other describers.
I'm being silly. Well, I'll tell you, I think people in live theater, let's separate this, in live theater, sometimes are so eager to communicate what's on stage that it gets in the way of what the people are there for. The people are there in the theater to experience a play. And our job is to enhance that experience, in my humble opinion, to do so as minimally as possible. Enhance, don't distract. And using too many words, covering the dialogue from the stage, that's a problem. That's a real problem. With movies and films, you don't have that same kind of problem usually because it's all produced and recorded and timed to the movie track. And hopefully the levels are adjusted so that, that can be a problem sometimes, but hopefully they're adjusted so that you don't have interference with the dialogue or critical sound elements or even, Sam, silence. Sometimes you want silence to just be there.
Right.
Let people digest what they've heard. So I think doing too much, I just think less is more with most audio description. And if you ask a blind person who's never experienced description, you know, well, what do you want to know about in this movie? What visual elements? Well, of course they're going to say, well, everything. I want to know everything that a sighted person can see. Well, I understand that, but
that's impossible.
That's not possible.
Right.
That's right. Your traditional audio description, you're using the pauses between bits and pieces of dialogue or critical sound elements. There isn't time. You know, now we get around that a little bit with in live theater with pre-show notes that are recorded, and you can access them through the same system. It tells you about the stage setting and costumes and material that's in the printed program.
Right.
There can even be intermission notes as well. You don't have that quite so much in media. You should, in a way, because now people are accessing media via the internet. There could be hyperlinks to a website or a page that gives you all kinds of background and gives you more information about what is in the movie visually that you're not going to be able to get during the movie.
Right. We need to take another short station break, and we'll be right back.
Earth is a planet born of fire. With more than 500 active volcanoes, our world is still being shaped by forces of mass construction. Join National Geographic photographer Karsten Peter as he dodges boulders at the edge of an erupting volcano in Indonesia, descends to a lava lake in Vanuatu, and explores acid ponds in Ethiopia. From the ruins of Pompeii to the depths of the ocean's hydrothermal vents, volcanoes, fires of creation, brings the raw power of our planet to the big screen. See it now in the Omni Theater at the Science Museum of Minnesota. Get tickets at smm.org. Does your car drive more stress than miles? If your vehicle costs you more time and money than it's worth, consider donating it to KFAI. Not only will you avoid the hassles of repairs and selling, but you'll also be making a meaningful contribution to KFAI. The process is simple and free, and your generous donation is tax deductible. Just call 855-277-2346 or donate online at kfai.careasy.org.
Tune to KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. You're listening to Disability in Progress. I'm Sam. We're speaking with Joel Snyder, who's author of The Visual Made Verbal. Joel, you know, you talk about really having to kind of pick what you describe. How do you balance being objective with being engaging? Do you need to be engaging, or what's the secret here?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And before addressing it, I want to just note that Minneapolis is the home for some excellent audio describers. Mm. I've done trainings there a couple of times, at least over the years. And live theater is covered really quite well in Minneapolis. So bravo to you. I'm sure you have a lot of listeners who have experienced audio description, because it's readily available for live theater throughout the Twin Cities. This question of subjectivity or objectivity is an important one. And from the very beginnings, Margaret Pfanstiel emphasized the need for objectivity. Again, kind of echoing the thought I mentioned earlier, nobody goes to the movies to experience the audio description. They go to the movies to experience the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't want to get in the way of the movie. We want a moviegoer to experience the movie, all moviegoers, as close to the same way as possible. So that, to give you an example, if I see Sam up on the movie screen there, right? You're an actress, and you're on the movie screen, and you're crying. Mm-hmm. You're playing a character, mm-hmm. of course, who's crying. Tears are streaming down your face. You are distraught. You're sad. You're depressed. Now, that was a little bit of description. Was that an appropriate description? I would maintain that the first few words were appropriate. You're crying. Tears are streaming down your cheeks. But for me to call you sad, that involves a subjective interpretation on my part.
Right.
That means I've looked at something, and in my brain, in half a second, I've decided, well, that means she's sad. And yet, that character on the screen, Sam, right? Maybe won the Minnesota lottery that morning. You know, she's not sad at all. The tears are tears of joy.
I'm thinking where I'm going to escape.
There you go. Exactly. You're going to buy an island somewhere or something. It's too cold in Minneapolis, right? So that's a kind of obvious example of the difference between subjectivity and objectivity. And that's still debated sometimes. You know, some people will say, oh, come on, it's clear that she's sad. Say sad, you know. Well, I think that robs the listener of the opportunity to perceive what's going on and make their own decision based on the context. Is the person sad? Is the person happy? Mm. You know, and that's the beauty of the arts, is really it allows you as an individual to experience it your own way. The subjectivity happens in you. It shouldn't happen with the audio describer.
Do you know, it's funny, because I heard almost the exact same thing from somebody a handful of years ago, and it made me evaluate every audio description thing where they said, for instance, you know, you shouldn't be saying a beautiful woman walks on the screen, because that's interpretation of what you think. You should say,
what's beautiful?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's right. That's right. You would say a woman with long blonde hair, you know, whatever. You're describing that person. And
that's
I find that even good audio describers, which I count generally good, mess that up. And I always find myself thinking about that.
That's right. And you should. I mean, it's a shortcut. When time is at such a premium, it's quicker to say beautiful than it is to say long blonde hair, wearing
totally
a dress,
whatever. What they could picture, you know, maybe I don't think long blonde hair is beautiful. Maybe to me, you know what I mean?
That's right. So
it totally challenges your concept and puts that in your brain, and maybe that's not what you think. I'm just so,
exactly.
So then where does that leave audio description? Is it an art or a science?
It's both. Yeah, I think of it about 60% art and 40% science. There are rules to follow. There really are guidelines and best practices. That's what most of my book is about. I ask describers, if they're tempted to say beautiful or sad or what have you, I ask them, what is it that you see that makes you think the person is sad? Say those things. Say those things and let the listener decide she's sad or she's beautiful or what have you, that kind of thing. It's tricky. It's tricky to do that. But I think it makes for a better overall experience. And I think it avoids any sort of sense of patronizing or condescending to the listener, like, oh, I've got to hold your hand orally and tell you what's happening, tell you about everything that's up there on the stage, because you won't get it otherwise. Well, that's just not true. Mm. You're missing the visual elements. And then give them that, and then you can figure out the rest along with everybody else.
Do you feel like audio description has changed throughout the years?
It has it's grown significantly, you know, so that now it's with all the films and streaming services. I think it's gotten more professional. I mean, again, it was strictly volunteer-based for live theater. And dance and opera, by the way, other performing arts forms. But now, with the advent of description for television broadcasts, for films, for streaming services, it's very much a profession. There are people make full-time livings as audio describers.
Right.
And with media, it's mostly going to be the writers of the description. And then freelance voice talents will provide the voicing. But it has grown to a point and gotten a bit more professional. There, my book is out there. There are other books, and people write scholarly papers about audio description. It really has grown as a topic for research, as an activity that you can pursue professionally. You know, even in live theater, Sam, you know, sometimes, and usually it's only two performances out of a whole run, that will be sign interpreted.
Right.
For people in the audience who are deaf, but they know sign language, right?
Right.
Listen, those sign interpreters are paid, and they're paid well. Nobody would imagine bringing a sign interpreter on and say, listen, yeah, this is a volunteer gig, you know. And they'd say, oh, is that right? Well, I'm sorry, but I'm a professional, and I provide the service, and I make my living as a sign language interpreter. I think we're going to get to the point, and we should, where audio describers are paid, just like sign language interpreters are paid, to provide a service that's every bit as professional as the sign language interpreter, as the actor on stage takes it seriously. They're getting paid, you know, unless it's a community theater or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think we have outgrown our infancy for sure. And maybe we're in late adolescence now, something like that, because there's still room for lots of new developments and even more professionalism.
Does audio description benefit people without disabilities?
Oh, that's great. Yes. I oftentimes say that audio description is great on a television program for someone who's blind, but it's also good for a sighted person who's in the kitchen making a sandwich while the TV is on in the living room.
Yes.
They don't miss a beat, you know, because they can hear everything they can't see, not because they're blind. They're just in the wrong room, you know. In fact, I think here's another development that's a long time coming and hopefully will happen. I can't wait for film producers to release just the audio track of a movie pair it with the audio description.
Ah, yes.
And then you have an audio film. Sighted people can listen to their favorite film while they're on a long drive, or they're in the gym, or what have you, that kind of thing. That would do wonders for the audio description field, because people in the general public would know more about it. So that's one. But I should emphasize, though, there have been studies that show the effectiveness of audio description for folks with all manner of learning disabilities, people with autism, mm-hmm. people with ADHD, people are simply learning a new language. You know, it's long been known that captions help people learn English. You know, if they're watching a program, their native language is something else. They're watching a program, they hear the English and they see it. Well, in the same way, audio description helps folks learn subtleties and the complexities of language, because they hear synonyms, they hear innovative word choice, they hear different uses of vocabulary. It helps build literacy, is what has been shown in a number of papers.
How do you train somebody to become a good audio describer? Are there natural ones and not so much, or can anyone be trained?
Yeah. Let me come to that, but I just wanted to add in one little piece regarding mm-hmm. audio description and literacy. We showed this happening some years back. I led a team of describers who, for the first time ever, provided description for Sesame Street.
Oh, yes.
And we got all kinds of wonderful feedback from blind adults who could follow the program along with their kids, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So audio description can appeal to so many different parts of the population. Now, your question was, I've made myself forget the question. I'm sorry.
A good audio describer. How can one be trained to be a good audio describer?
Of course.
And are there...
Of course.
There must be people who kind of have a more natural knack than others.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, a good command of language, a great vocabulary, the ability to translate what you see into words. And that really is it's an art form. It's a kind of, as I say, translation. Can you use words effectively, innovatively, in ways that help conjure that image in the mind's eye? A lot of, I teach, all around the world and throughout the United States. And sometimes we actually audition people to be a part of the training. So we actually have them try a little bit of audio description, and I can get a sense of their ability to be objective, their ability to use language. And we pick and choose the people that seem to have that capability to go through the training. But even then, I have found that if I have 15 people in a class over 5 days or over a whole semester in a college, I would say maybe 5 to 10% of them have what it takes, can really run with it and develop good description, whether it's live for a theater event or live for a broadcast event. Like I personally voiced and wrote, if that's the right word for it, the description for 3 different presidential inaugurals on ABC television. And obviously it's live, so there's no rehearsal, really. I had a lot of research that I did, but that's another kind of trick or knack that comes with experience, being able to not only see and speak almost simultaneously, but also to find a way to interject those comments, those descriptions, around the soundtrack of the film or the event or whatever it is that's happening live. And that's tricky. You have to have a good sense of the pauses that happen in an opera, in a musical, in a play, anything like that. So you know, I think those kinds of capabilities are what we look for. A good command of language, vocabulary, and just a sense of what is most important to describe.
I have just a couple quick things I want to get. I'm hoping to play the end track that maybe we can get to if.
Oh yeah,
have
I can play. I have some.
I have it on my thing too, but it's a little longer than I thought. But I'll try to do it. I want to
play just a minute of the first one.
I want to just ask real quick though.
Sure.
Please tell us how people can get your book.
Oh my goodness. Well. Amazon is Amazon.com. It's on Amazon, and sometimes it'll come up and say, "Oh, it's unavailable, or it's sold out, or something like that." But that shouldn't happen. So I think the best thing to do, if you can't get it through Amazon, is simply send me a note at jsnyder@audiodescribe.com, and I'll make sure you get a copy. I'll make sure you get a signed copy,
cool.
A matter of fact. And that might be the most direct way to do it, but it is available on Amazon.
I'm wondering, are you on BARD?
Yes. Yes. So
excellent.
If you're a member of BARD, then absolutely, you can simply listen to it for free.
Cool.
Absolutely. An audio version of it. Yeah.
There's two things. I just want to put my two cents out there on all those people
please.
Who are thinking of becoming audio describers. My pet peeve, please do not eat and chew gum while you're describing. Yes, I have had it. Somebody was eating during their...
Oh, my God.
And I was
That's
appalled.
That's as well you should be.
But real quick, too, for you, now... This whole AI is just bursting from the seam with technology here. How do you think AI is going to affect the audio description today?
Well, it already has. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are description producers or film producers who hire description producers and say, listen, we want to save some money here, so we're going to have AI do the voicing, which is it AI or not? It's speech synthesis, basically.
Right.
Any computer can do that pretty much these days. You kind of put a script into the computer, and it will voice it for you. Will they voice it well with the same kind of subtlety and nuance
that
a trained voice talent can? Probably not. Even today, they can produce voices that sound human,
mm-hmm.
but do they have that same kind of subtlety and nuance that a human voice talent brings? And I say not. Not only that, they make errors.
Right.
I remember I do a presentation on AI and audio description, and I play a short clip of a video that I voiced the description for, and then I play it with the same words being voiced artificially, if you will, with speech synthesis. The first line of the description is, he throws the grenade over the fence, right? The AI did, he throws the grenade over the fence.
Yes,
I mean,
I've heard
that.
I've heard that, and I'm like, well, this is
That's
done
so
by
silly.
AI.
And, you know, they're starting to look at description, how the description, the words could be written by AI, and that's far more complicated, and there are real problems with that too.
Well, I want to play a little bit. I'll see if I can get to the part. I ask people to bear with me because I couldn't splice as
well. If you have the one that's labeled number one,
yes,
Sammy, just play for 30 seconds, maybe.
Okay, but it won't have the audio description.
No, it will not. And that's kind of what I want to make a point of.
So here we go.
of a feature film. This is a professional film. It was made about 25 years ago, called The Color of Paradise. Mm. But I play an excerpt that, if you just listen to this excerpt, all you hear are birds.
And you can hear the boy in the background. You can hear
you can hear the sounds of, you know, rustling or something like that. But after 30 seconds, if I was blind, I'd be out of the movie theater. I don't get it. There's a lot of birds. Or I'd be punching the guy next to me with my elbow. What's going on?
Yeah.
So then I play the same clip with the audio description that I wrote and voiced when the movie was broadcast on ABC about 20 years ago or something. And it's a world of difference, because what we do is we try to weave the descriptive language around the sound elements. There's no words, there's no dialogue, but it doesn't mean you talk all the time with the description.
Right.
It's being sensitive to what's happening, and it becomes very clear. Oh, that's what's happening. Oh, okay. You can understand the movie when you get to a portion that's just all sound. You're going to be lost if there is no audio description.
Right. Yeah.
So that's really what I try to, and then sometimes I show it with the video, and we kind of analyze, gee, why did I choose that to describe, and what kind of words did I use to describe that? So it's a great learning tool to kind of demonstrate description that way.
Yeah, and it really is, you know, you hear the birds, you hear the boy sort of, but you really don't know what he's doing. And when you talk,
right,
the added description talks, it tells his gestures and what happens and what he's doing with the bird and things like that.
And not to give away the ending or something, but what you find out when you see the images is that the boy is blind. And if you listen to the description closely, you hear him picking up a bird. You hear him climbing a tree. Mm. The description talks about how his fingers feel the branches. His arm runs down the trunk of the tree. There's all these images of touching. And it's not because I wanted to do that. That's what the filmmaker did. The images show him touching. And I think that's the point, is that this 10-year-old boy can do anything a sighted 10-year-old boy can do. Climb a tree, return a little nestling to the nest. It really is it's a great movie. I recommend it to you. The Color of Paradise.
Let's see if we got to the description part.
He latches onto a tangle of thin upper branches. His legs flail for a foothold. Muhammad stretches an arm between a fork in the trunk of the tree and wedges in his head and shoulder. His shoes slip on the rough bark.
So that's just a little piece of yes.
Yeah, exactly.
A great piece. Joel, thank you so much for your time.
Oh my goodness, this is fun.
It's been a lot of fun, and I would like to read the book, so I will make sure I download the book. But it's been really a pleasure having you on.
Oh, Sam, this is wonderful, chance to meet you and meet your listeners in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
Well, good luck with more. You know how my wish is that your book reaches a lot of people and that audio description just becomes wider and wider and more naturally used.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll mention quickly the website for my company is simply audiodescribe.com. My email address is jsnyder, jsnyder at audiodescribe.com. And it might be good to listen contact the American Council of the Blind's Audio Description Project, a project I started 15 years ago with ACB. That website is simply adp.acb.org. Lots of information about audio description.
Joel, it's been fun. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sam.
202 KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Charlene Dahl is my PR research person. Aaron is my podcaster. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We were listening and speaking with Joel Snyder, who wrote the book, The Visual Made Verbal. Fresh Fruit is up.